This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's get into some real news, for heaven's sake. You got to do the burning platform with Justice Malana. See what's going on over there. He is in Cape Town this morning, but he's given us a proper agenda of things to talk about. The burning platform is brought to you by Nando's. We love Nando's. You never know when you start an episode of the burning platform whether it's going to be lemon and herb, mild, hot, or very hot. But usually it's either hot or very hot. There aren't days anymore in South African history, politics, society, the economy, where it isn't hot or very hot. And this morning, Justice has his eye on the ball. Good morning, Mr. Malala. How are you? Yeah, I love this. Justice, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you guys? Yes, we can hear you now, loud and clear. How are you, Justice?
Oh, good. I'm well. I'm good. Why? What's the laughter about now?
That is exactly what I would also like to know.
Well, first of all, what is with the profile picture on your WhatsApp of you with a surfboard? What's that all about?
What?
Go to your
me with a surfboard.
Yeah, it's you. Go to your WhatsApp and go and look at the picture of you with a surf. Is it you with a surfboard?
No, Jesus, guys, wow. Okay, let's get on with the show.
Justice, we get it. Double O J is in action.
You've got a job to do. We're not judging.
All right, so Justice, let's get into it then. I mean, there's no point in us messing around. Just 2 days ago, the president pulled such a big surprise that nobody in the top six knew it was going to happen. The ministers themselves had no idea. There was just a massive reshuffle. Is this an indication that this president is completely backed into a corner?
Can I just say, guys, I mean, can you imagine how heartless can you be? Braden Zimande was out and about somewhere. A reporter asks him, so what do you make of this reshuffle? What's your response? The man hadn't been called, hadn't been told that, Baba, clear your office. It's like, it reminds me of March when Pravin Gordhan is sitting there waiting
right.
to get a call. He doesn't get a call. Suddenly at midnight, there's a new Minister of Finance, Minister of this, Minister of that. Last night, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Dudu Mieni of SAA was kicked out or was removed as chair of the board of SAA. And I mean, she was with the president in Nigeria on Saturday getting a statue erected for him, a road named after him, a merit award given to him. But how does this happen that the man can laugh with you and then he stabs you in the back just like that? I mean, if a man was well named, you know, his second name is Gedleyihlekisa. And Gedleyihlekisa means the one who stabs you while he laughs with you. And man, you've got to think this guy's amazing. But that's just the flavor of it. What's this president doing? Why did he have that cabinet reshuffle? I think it's very clear now that it's all-out war in the ANC, that the president sees many of his comrades as his enemies, and that he's cleaning house. So there are two things here. President Zuma has long wanted the nuclear build program to happen, and it wasn't happening. First of all, Tina Jumat Peterson was dragging her feet. Then she got removed from energy. Then he installed, and you guys will see a pattern here. President Zuma always likes young people, likes people who have no political clout themselves. Mm-hmm. He elevates them and uses them for whatever he would like to do. So Mamoloko Kubai was young, doesn't have a lot of political clout herself, but the president elevated her to energy. She wasn't moving fast enough on the nuclear build program, and so she's been shifted, and a loyalist David Mashobo, who is well known for visiting spas in Nelspruit and doing other things, is now the Minister of Energy. The Minister of Energy has to move swiftly on the nuclear bill program, and the President has for long wanted that to happen. So that is what is happening there. That's the first thing. The second thing is that he is, as you intimate, he's cleaning house. Bladen Zimande has been totally on the side now of those who say President Zuma must step down, President Zuma must go. He's not fit to govern. He shouldn't have been elected at all as ANC president. And the president wants to get rid of those people. So Blade is the first to go. My view is that we'll have another one of these. My view is that all the rumors you're hearing about a possible Cyril Ramaphosa push is something that we shouldn't discount. If Cyril Ramaphosa doesn't go in the next 8 weeks before December, if he loses at the conference in December in Gauteng, then he will definitely be out when the ANC goes back in January next year. So I think that is what we are facing. That is what this cabinet reshuffle is all about.
I'm curious about two things. First of all, Justice, did the president or anybody else in government already get any deposits from the Russians on this nuclear build? I mean, are there monies that have changed hands?
We don't know, but we can surmise. Why is the president of the republic so desperate to get this deal done that he's moved people about, that he's been really pushing to go for it? If you listen to energy experts from, you know, Professor Eberhard at UCT, others all over the country, who say, actually, right now, we don't need nuclear. Why are we so desperate to get nuclear to go in? David Mashobo has said over the past 2 days that, you know, this is policy of the ANC. We said we'll have an energy mix. Look at how Quebec has worked. Look at Pelindaba and so forth. And so he's made the sounds that, no, I'm just following what the ANC told me. But I thought the ANC is such an amazing organization. When the facts change, it stands to change with the facts. So I'm surprised that he's pulling this ANC once energy mix, and the energy mix has to include nuclear in there. That you have to wonder why people are so desperate to implement nuclear. The short answer to your question, Gareth, is that really what we are faced here is a government that we cannot trust, and a government that may well, or a presidency and others who may well have struck a deal with the Russian state and the Russian nuclear company Rosatom, and may have taken a forward deposit, as it were, and are now under pressure to deliver. That is a theory that's been put forward by many, many key thinkers and writers in Russia who say, well, looks like those guys don't have anything to do anywhere in the world, and so they came to South Africa. And there's a lot of talk about possibly that some people may have received, shall we say, an incentive to make this happen, and now they are under pressure to deliver. Those who follow these things would say Vladimir Putin, the leader of Russia, is not someone who one process. And so if a promise has been made that nuclear will be sourced from Russia, he will want that to happen. And so this is what's happening with us in South Africa, that we are under pressure, that some people are under pressure to make it happen, and it's not happening. So the desperation now is to get it implemented as soon as possible, as a measure or as an attempt at two things. One, if in Mangaung the Jacob Zuma faction loses, then it's already underway and it's signed. If the Jacob Zuma faction wins, then it's let's keep going. We've already done it.
The other question is to move on from Russia for a second, and this is based on comments you made almost 2.5 years ago when we started the Burning Platform. You said, it's amazing how quickly the president discards people who are no longer useful to him, and you intimated that at the beginning of this discussion this morning. But if you look at a picture of the stage after his 2009 victory in Polokwane, and you look at all the people,
yes,
the people who were closest to him then, the leader of the ANC Youth League, Julius Malema, the leader of the SACP, Bladen Zimande, the leader of KASATU, Zeleny Zimavavi, all of these people have been cast aside. Blade is only the last and most recent one to fall. Who else should be nervous about this misplaced loyalty in the president?
that's such a, it's a lovely historical, you know, we all have to look at it. One day we'll go back and say, wow, that name, stab you in the back while he laughs with you. There isn't a single one, as you say, rightly. All those people, Julius Malema and Zeleny Zimavavi, famously said that they were prepared to kill for Jacob Zuma. Well, they're out in the political wilderness. Vavi's leading a whole new trade union federation. If there's anyone who has been by Zuma's side since 2005, it's certainly Bladen Zimande. Zeleny Zimavavi tweeted, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that some of us, meaning himself, don't sleep at night because we constantly thinking, how did we push and work for this man to become president? So I think some people have already left. If you think back to 2007, remember all those heads of spy agencies, Mo Sheikh, Gibson and Njanja, Pue Nyanda is gone. If you think about some of the key players, Lindiwe Sisulu was a key player in the Jacob Zuma entourage, and she's also running now against his preferred candidate. Among those who are around President Jacob Zuma now, if you think about this cabinet reshuffle on Tuesday, think about Bongani Bongo, who's the new James Bond, who's the new Minister of Intelligence, State Security. Well, you know, what political cover does he have? He came from Mpumalanga. He was in D.D. Mabuza's office and suddenly elevated to a ministerial position. He can be discarded any minute. David Mahlobo himself said something curious the other day. He said, all I have to do now is get rid of the stuff that's in my head because I know so much. Well, Jacob Zuma could dump him any minute, and he might find himself with a head that's very achy-breaky because suddenly he's got nothing else to think about. So those who are around Jacob Zuma now, as they say in politics, no permanent friends, only interests. And Jacob Zuma has no friends. He will dump, and he will continue to dump people who think that they're his best friends today. It's no guarantee, and the list is long of those who have gone before them.
All right, so you mentioned that Cyril Ramaphosa may be on the line. Who else needs to look carefully out for their own jobs in the immediate future?
Well, certainly, if you start in the ANC, my view is that the ANC now is leaderless, that Jacob Zuma is running a state from the union buildings, Masamba Ndlovu, where he's running rogue. So at the ANC, inside the ANC, Gwede Mantashe, it's only a matter of weeks, but however he tries, my view is that Jacob Zuma will see the door soon. This weekend, for our listeners who may be invested in these things, We may also see some serious action, Gareth. The SACP is meeting this weekend. The Central Committee of Politburo is going to have a big meeting about Jacob Zuma and reflect on what has happened with the cabinet reshuffle. But it might be worth thinking about who else is in the SACP leadership and what is their next step, given the events of the past week. We know that the chair of the SACP, Senzeni Zokwana, is in cabinet. There are people like Tulas Nnesi, you remember him, he defended Jacob Zuma on the Nkandla matter and then turned around and found his voice. There are people like Ben Martins. There's Buti Manamela, who is with the Young Communist League, but also sits on the Politburo. All those people couldn't find their conscience in the recently when on August 8th, when the motion of no confidence was put forward against Jacob Zuma. What are they going to do now? Will the SACP finally say, we've invested so much in this man, it's time to walk away? Because if they find their voice and say that, then we could have a bit of excitement in our politics again, because they might say, not enough, we're going to withdraw from Jacob Zuma's cabinet. So we need to watch Tulas Nnesi, Jeremy Cronin, Senzeni Zokwana, Rob Davis, Godfrey Oliphant, Ibrahim Patel. All these people are in the SACP leadership and they are in cabinet as appointees to all these various portfolios. So they might walk out. Cyril Ramaphosa, there's already a lot that indicates that Jacob Zuma doesn't want him in. You remember that Pravin Gordhan and Privacy Jonas were recalled from London on the 26th, I think, of March on the basis that, no, there's an intelligence report that says that they are spies for white monopoly capital or whatever one chooses to call it. And they were fired on that basis. That report, part of it was seen and are still floating about on the internet. It was as if it was written by a grade 4 student. It's so incoherent, it's a joke. But there seems to be lots of intelligence reports floating about indicating that, oops, Cyril Ramaphosa is James Bond. So you guys might laugh and say, oh, where's justice? The real James Bond seems to be the deputy president, according to these intelligence rumors. So Cyril Ramaphosa is in the cross eyes, and we may have all sorts of things happening around him. I don't think before the conference, but I need to caution that Jacob Zuma is someone who does the unexpected, as we saw this week, as we've seen over the past 5 years. And so I'm not putting a bet on Cyril Ramaphosa not being fired as well, maybe next week, maybe the week after.
Wouldn't that
it's
be interesting?
Now that has,
in some ways, a repetition of a repetition of history. I mean, he was fired, Jacob Zuma was fired by Thabo Mbeki when he was deputy president. And then, of course, we know what happened after that. And then if Cyril were fired by Jacob Zuma as deputy president and then came back for the elections and ended up having a Jacob Zuma type victory, that would be quite a story. It would be history repeating itself.
It would indeed, but one thing that you would see here is that with Jacob Zuma being who he is, allow for a victory by someone that he's just fired, a victory by someone that he knows for sure would go for him. I think what we are flirting with, Gareth, and I don't mean to scare people, is the fact that we have a president who may use state resources, who is using some state resources, in fact, to go after his political opponents.
Justice,
and whether we can believe
I'm concerned even more. I saw a video this morning on ENCA of the president in Limpopo addressing some crowd, and he was surrounded by military personnel. These were people decked out in full, not even riot gear, because that's a police thing, full military outfits with their faces covered and with automatic weapons, in fatigues, effectively, in camouflage fatigues. And they were following him around. I mean, these are some dangerous signs of a, you know, a tyrannical autocrat who's surrounding himself now with military machinery in order to protect his person. This is crazy.
That is crazy. By my last count, when I saw Jacob Zuma's entourage, there are about 20 cars. There are at least 25 bodyguards. And what you're telling me now is something I haven't seen before. But if you think about it, Jacob Zuma has been operating outside of his political home, the ANC, for a while now. And so the paranoia is huge. He keeps on saying, oh, I was poisoned. And then he turns around, as he did a few weeks ago, and tells Parliament that no one poisoned me. So there is a paranoia that's going on that is quite scary. But I think that paranoia feeds into abuse of state entities like the intelligence services. And what we are seeing with the use of these intelligence reports, these bogus intelligence reports, is a manifestation of that. So I think we are in uncharted waters. I think we are in dangerous waters. I think Jacob Zuma has become quite dangerous to stability. I think what he triggered on Tuesday may have some far-reaching effects on South Africa. And really, right now, it's whether the ANC can impose its moral leadership on Jacob Zuma and stop him from shifting things to an unsustainable level, which leads to pushback against him. What? But certainly we are dealing with someone who is deeply, deeply paranoid or deeply, deeply afraid that his tenure is coming to an end and that he might go to jail and therefore might use state apparatus to try and stay out of jail.
Justice, what happened with the SABC board?
Well, the SABC board was an interesting one. President Jacob Zuma sat around trying to not appoint that SABC board. I think we can glean from what he was doing. He wanted executives at the SABC who would be appointed by him rather than by a new board. When he came under pressure, remember there was a court challenge by activists from all across the country, the Save Our SABC Coalition and others, he realized that this is one he can win because the Constitution explicitly says the Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Communications chooses and gives you a list, you rubber stamp it. You don't get to change it around. So he realized that he can't do anything about that. So he had a list of 12 people. He had Kanyisile Kweyama, for example, who was the chair who turned things around at the SABC in the interim board. He didn't choose her as the chair. He chose someone who happens to be the chair of one of his wife's foundations. He chose as the deputy someone who happens to be very close to Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and was one of her key advisors when she was at the AU. So you can still see that he's fighting back. He's trying to get his own people or people he perceives to be close to him, because I don't think, in fact, that Phoebe Potrieter-Kurula is that close to him. But he's trying to get people that he thinks he can manipulate to be in charge. And so we got the SABC board that we wanted. A good SABC board has been appointed despite his opposition, but he's tried to put the two people that he thinks politically may be close to him in charge there. So it will be interesting to see how that pans out, given that he didn't get what he thought he would get.
I saw an interesting interview between Minister of Finance Malusi Gigaba and Richard Quest yesterday on CNN. And he was convinced that it's actually a good thing that the president's under such scrutiny and that all these corruption charges are being brought. And he said it's good because it shows the institutions are healthy and they work. And then I saw Brian Dams in Parliament yesterday saying some pretty devastating things. I mean, tell us again what he said as accurately as you can.
The key thing about the testimony by Pandam is for our listeners, he was the CEO of Eskom up to 2014, I believe. Now, he tells a funny little story that for me is very interesting. I've spoken about some of these bits before. And it was that Brian Dames was called by a young man called Sia, not Asia in the studio, but Sia Bonga Mashangu, who was an advisor to the Minister of Public Enterprises. That Minister of Public Enterprises was Malusi Gigaba. Now, the story sounds very familiar. Brian Dames is the head, the CEO of Eskom. He gets called to a meeting in Midrand, not in Saxenwold, in Midrand, but by the same people who live in Saxenwold. And he's told, we've decided that we can work with you. They don't tell him who's decided, who is we. They say, we've decided we can work with you. And we've got three things on the agenda, and they talk in general terms about those things, and they say, yeah, we think we should work together, we can work together. He says he didn't know what was going on, and he ups and leaves. But listen to that name, Siyabonga Mkhwanazi. That is the same name that appears when the acting head of the SAA was asked to visit by this young man a house in Saxenwold, and lo and behold, when he arrives at that house, they sit around, and that gentleman who was acting SAA head at the time is then told, we've decided we can work with you. Here's 500,000 rand as a gift for you to go enjoy yourself. He gets cross and says, what is this? Why are you giving me money that I haven't worked for, and so forth and so forth? For me, Minister Malusi Gigaba still has to explain to us why so many of his advisors were always taking leaders of state-owned enterprises to the Gupta family homes to be introduced, to be told that we can work together, and so forth and so forth. This is not the only advisor. That he had another advisor when he was at Home Affairs who also seemed intertwined with the Gupta family. So Malusi Gigaba may say all these things about institutions and so forth and so forth. The bottom line is that South Africans don't trust him. South Africans don't believe that this is the man who should be holding the keys to the safe of this country. His fingerprints are all over state capture. His fingerprints are all over the Gupta family shenanigans. And that piece of evidence yesterday by Brian Dames in Parliament points us once again to why Malusi Gigaba has a mountain to climb, whether it's next week when he delivers the medium-term budget policy statement, whether it's over the next 6 months as he goes to the budget in February. There will be questions about him throughout because there is so much evidence that implicates him in the state capture story. So when he tells Richard Quest that, Oh, no, it's all good. It's all fine because the institutions are standing up and so forth and so forth. Well, he's been part of the undermining of those institutions. Mm-hmm. Those state-owned enterprises are now, many of them are rated junk because of the Gupta family influence on them, the Gupta family's attempt to use them to loot. The evidence that's coming out about the looting at Eskom and so forth, all this points to essentially some complicity by the ministries that were run by Malusi Gigaba. So it will be interesting to see what more comes out. But those names, Siyabonga Mahlangu and other Gigaba advisors are already implicated. All this stuff, by the way, happened while Malusi Gigaba was a public enterprises minister and then home affairs minister. And no matter how much he can protest, he needs to explain what happened exactly there.
Justice, that means our finance minister's compromised, but we sort of knew that from the beginning. I mean, when he got the job, we kind of got an inkling that that was the case. Let's just turn our attention to a much smaller, more petty crime in terms of the money stolen. It's still thieving and nepotism and corruption. But if we look at Lynn Brown and her partner, it's almost sad, right?
It's so sad. I mean, you know, I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told it to you guys, but one of the things that happened to me as a young person, I was asked to come and meet this Nigerian entrepreneur in London, and I arrived at his hotel, and it was a Friday, it was a Saturday morning. This entrepreneur had just flown from South Africa the night before, and he arrives in London. He's holding a copy of the Mail and Guardian. This is way back, Sia, you are very young, but this is way back in 2003. He says to me, he starts shouting at me as soon as he walks into the room and says, "What's wrong with you?" I'm thinking, whoa, what's going on here? He's holding the Mail and Guardian, and on the front page of the Mail and Guardian is when the story broke that Jacob Zuma had taken a bribe, allegedly taken a bribe. The bribe was $50,000, which at the time was 500,000 rand. The man was so angry. He says, "Justice, what's wrong with you people? This is the deputy president of South Africa, and he takes a 50,000 rand bribe." So I'm like him. I'm saying, "Yeah, I told you. How can he take a 50,000 rand?" He says, "Yes, even my third mistress, my fourth mistress wouldn't take a 50,000 rand. She would throw it back in my face and say, make it $500,000. Dollars instead of $50,000. And the point he was making was, how small-minded, how village can we be that a whole deputy president can be bought for $50,000? He was appalled. Now, this is so sad. You know, I think a lot about people like Lynn Brown, who was an activist, stood up against apartheid and all that and all that. She's throwing it all away. Listen to what the Sunday Times said this past weekend. It said, "Public Enterprises Minister Lynn Brown's longtime lover and a close associate scored oil tenders from Saddam Eskom, the SOE that she oversees. It said that Eastmart Solutions, owned by Brown's partner, Ingrid Tufvesson and Michelle McMaster, the mother of Brown's former PA, Kim Davids." Now, you remember Kim Davids. She's the one who suddenly said she fell sick and ended up at the Oberoi Hotel. What was she doing at the Oberoi Hotel? While Museveni Zwane, the Guptas, the Gigi Zani, other pump ministers were in the hotel at the same time. What was she doing suddenly in Dubai in that week? And the other director of this company is Kim David's sister, Sarissa Benny David. they took, they compromised themselves for tenders worth 1.2 million rand. This Lynn Brown is a minister. Her partner and her PA's mother and her PA's sister have a company which gets 1.2 million from Eskom, and they deny it and all that, but it's all there. 1.2 million rand. Lynn Brown has spent her entire life in the ANC, before that fighting against apartheid, and this is for 1.2 million rand? I mean, she could go and sit on the board of some private company and make that in a skip and a hop. Why do you do these things? And for me, there's nothing more debilitating in our politics than to see how people who were once amazing and great compromise themselves for this, for these puny, paltry monies. And you know, even if it's big monies, it's, you are so much bigger than this. Why do you need to do it? Why do you need to take money? You don't need to at all. But this is the ethical and moral world that we are in now. And sadly, that's what we are settled with. But it's a very sad story, the story of Lynn Brown.
Shame.
If there's anyone who should just step down, it's Lynn Brown. It's amazing that Jacob Zuma can have a cabinet reshuffle on Tuesday, and Lynn Brown is still in it. Faith Mutambi is still in it. Mesuren Zizwane is still in it. Des Van Rooyen is still in it. All these people, all these people, without a single exception, are people who we can now, I can say it now on our platform, that these people work for the Guptas, and they can't, they won't even raise their finger against it, because it's so true, it's so in the public domain, that it, you don't need to worry that you'll be sued. They won't, because they are guilty as charged.
Justice, let's not forget that last Friday was a pretty important day, and the president is accused number one. I mean, this must be putting him under inordinate pressure. We know he's behaving very strangely at the moment. What are the repercussions of what the decision was that was made on Friday last week?
They are huge. President Jacob Zuma has fought against those 783 counts of bribe-taking. Remember that he's facing 18 charges of fraud and corruption and racketeering. He took money. Everyone will be interested to know he took money 783 times from Shabir Sheikh. Shabir Sheikh was convicted and went to jail, and in fact is still serving his jail time, although he's outside and has been outside for 8 years or so now. So the briber has been convicted, the bribee is still fighting. The South African political news cycle is so fast that here we are, just 6 days later, we've forgotten about what happened last Friday, that the Supreme Court of Appeal said Jacob Zuma has a case to answer, and he must answer it. So for me, when Malusi Gigaba tells CNN, tells Richard Quest that, no, the institutions are working, they're strong, and so forth, this is where we've got to see them working. Once again, where is Sean? Because Sean, 6 days ago, was given a clear indication by the courts that he has to give what Jacob Zuma has been begging for. Jacob Zuma has been begging for his day in court, and he should be given it, and he should just go and stand trial and either get exonerated or go to jail. So it's a big case. It's a big issue. President Jacob Zuma is no longer now someone who is just how shall I say, fighting charges. Those charges are back and current. He is a suspect in a criminal matter. And therefore, the ANC has a decision to make if it's still functioning. You'll remember that in 2008, the Pietermaritzburg High Court ruled that Jacob Zuma, the charges should be dropped against him. Mm-hmm. The ANC and Gwadiman Tash in particular rushed back to Joburg and said Thabo Mbeki shouldn't appeal that decision. He appealed it, and they fired him for that. Well, Jacob Zuma is now in exactly the same position. He's now a criminal suspect. The courts have said, charge this man. The Supreme Court of Appeals has said, charge this man. Will the ANC act? It won't. I don't believe it will act at all against him. And so, essentially, politically, we are led by a criminal suspect who is not being, how shall I say, who's not being scrutinized by his party. And South Africans will need to watch whether the institutions that Gigaba speaks about, so the NPA, whether it will act and act with honor and go for the president.
What are the chances?
My bet is that, yes, sorry.
What are the chances?
We've spoken about Sean Abrahams before. Sean Abrahams is totally compromised. He's sitting there right now. If you read someone like Pierre Defos, who has clearly looked at the law and says, it's very clear there is no reason to dilly-dally, just go for it and do it. But the chances are very slim. Jacob Zuma is going to fight through his lawyers, and Sean Abrahams is going to sit there. And the days, as he once told us, of disrespecting the NPA will continue because he has brought disrespect to the NPA himself.
All right, Justice, thank you very much for this morning. As always, it's been very good to talk to you, for you to give us some clarity on all of these very messy issues. But let's hope there's some clarity on the political front for the ANC soon, because they've had a really, really horrible year. The ANC support base must be very, very compromised at the moment, too.
I often wonder how the ANC's members feel right now as their party goes through these massive big troubles, as their party leaders are implicated in so many scandals. And perhert they need to assert themselves at this upcoming conference and say, not in our name, this is enough. We want the ANC of Nelson Mandela and Oliver Tambo and Albert Luthuli. Whether they can do that will be the measure of them as leaders in their own right. If they can't pull their organization back from the people who are destroying it, then they will find themselves punished over the next few years. In 2019, my view is that we are looking at the Macron moment, if not the Julius and Musi Maimane moment, because the ANC is eating itself up more than ever before now.
All right. Thank you, Justice. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, and brought to you by Nando's, because without brave people like Nando's bringing you the news that you really need to hear, you would be caught up in the news cycle of all those media organizations that are so mediocre that even the term medium doesn't do them any justice.
This is CliffCentral.com.